Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock.
Yay!
A black tie, red tie gala.
Oh, God.
Actually, no red ties. That brings up too many associations to a certain person I don't like.
How about bow tie? We skull on it.
Absolutely. And in any case, we are recording in person from the lovely Casa de Crash, or Casa de Partial Crash.
Cheryl Betts' house, the woman who saved my soul.
Absolutely. And I have driven across a snowstorm, basically, yes, to record with Billy today. So
it's like The Shining. Yeah. He took the snowcat all the way up the friggin' valley to...
My thought was I was going to get an axe in the chest when I walked in the door.
I put the axe down. I felt sorry for you. I put the axe down. It's all good.
It was going to be Billy solo.
No red rum tonight.
Yeah. Red rum is best when it's made with actual red.
Ooh.
But in any case, this evening we are doing our best of 2017 show.
Woo!
I always look forward to this time of year. Gives us a chance to reflect back on, you know, what we saw, that we...
The things we missed that we wish we had seen.
Absolutely, and we'll probably be filling in some gaps for each other as we go through this episode. Billy loves to take the direct-to-Netflix hits for the show, if you haven't caught up on that already. But that'll be for another show.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we're going to get rolling here. And Billy, I wanted to start off maybe with something slightly different than previous years.
Yes.
Is there anything that maybe was high profile as far as horror films were concerned this year that you knew about but just didn't get a chance to watch maybe before we sat down here today?
Well, I'm glad I got a chance to see Creep 2 last night. But other than that, I missed Burn, which I wanted to see, which I heard some things about. Mon Mon Monsters from Taiwan, which I wanted to see.
All right.
And MFA, which I've been dying to see.
I have seen that one, yeah.
Bastard, I hate you. Those are the big three that I wanted to get to that I haven't hit yet.
Okay. So. Yeah. Actually, I haven't heard of, I guess, three of those. All the ones except MFA, I don't think I've heard of.
Yeah. Oh,
So I'll have to get those from you proper after we finish here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get a chance to see the movie The Babysitter. I know Bill Meeker, you saw it? Okay, all right. I know Bill Meeker wrote a review for Loud Green Bird, and a lot of other people have seen it.
Yeah, Samara Weaving stars, the delicious, hyper-delicious.
Nice.
Oh my God, you got to see that movie there, Johnny.
Okay. Also, it's also another Netflix one, is a 1922, which is based off the Stephen King novella.
Right.
And I saw that has Thomas Jane and Molly Parker, who that like spiked my interest when I saw she was in it too.
I gotta see it now. I'll see it tonight.
And I've actually heard good things about that one too.
Molly Parker's just fantastic.
Man. I still gotta see Kissed.
Oh, Kissed is just, oh. Oh, my God.
And then there were two others that I've been hearing buzz about. Super Dark Times. And
really?
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. That one's kind of been a recent one, but people on Twitter seem to be going a bit batty for it.
Mm-hmm.
And Boys in the Trees.
Oh, how did I miss that? Oh, Palco. He told Greg Palco.
Oh, really?
Palco Designs told me about it. It was on my... I can't believe I didn't get to it.
We suck, Bill.
Oh. That was on my list of films to watch. It's been so cold and I'm bald. My brain's frozen, man. It's like, it was friggin' -3 with the wind chill in Stroudsburg and PA. And it's like,
Bill, do I need to buy you a crocheted stocking cap?
Actually, Cheryl, for Christmas, Cheryl Betts knitted me a wonderful green and black hat for my little bald head to keep me toasty. And to keep my ears from drying up and falling off my face. That would just be horrible.
Oh, man.
Have that now, but however.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Boys in the Tree. Oh, Palco's going to kill me now. He's like, you idiot. I told you.
Yeah, I'm very curious about those. And some of these were just.
I've heard great things about Boys in the Trees, man.
Yeah, me too.
Shit.
And it's just a matter of more like, well, hey, I knew we were meeting up and there's only so much time to get stuff in.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I watched 28 horror films from this year. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many you did. And we know there's like, you know, like 75 more to go. And
it's just, yeah.
Things are going to pop up that we didn't even, that no one heard of, like, you know, over the next few months. And then we'll be, because this has happened before, where it's like, man, I wish we had done this show in March, but we can't do that. That's insane. So
yeah, I know some podcasts do that, and I understand the reasons behind it. But it just comes to a point where it's like, this is, I feel like this is kind of the ritual, and it's one of the constants is the year-end show or shows, and you know, you just go with what you got, and
so let's do it.
We're doing a perpetual, you know, we're perpetually trying to make up time, so. Well, Bill.
Yes, Johnny.
I figured we'd approach the rest of the show from how we usually do it, which is we start off with the stuff that was kind of on the edge, maybe. Like, we usually grade on a 3 out of 5, but like from a 1 to 5 scale. So I consider anything starting at a 3 to be a quality something I would recommend. To people. So these are my, you know, I have these edge films that are on the edge. You know, they could have gone to a 2.5, but they went to a 3 instead.
It's funny that you mention that because I have a large section that I call
what do you call it?
No Man's Land, No Horror's Land.
is that what yours is?
Yeah, I have about 7 of those 7-8 films that are right in that category.
Well, that works then. Do you want to
get us ramble them off?
Well,
that's all I'm going to do because we want to talk about our top 5. And these are all films that had some merit but also didn't. So that's why they're in this category.
Right.
The Bye Bye Man, which was from USA and China, co-production. It had its moments, and it could have been awesome, but it was sorely lacking in other ways.
Well, what'd you give that? Is that a 3, Bill?
These are like, you know, these are anywhere between 2.
Okay.
For me, these are, the bad ones are like, you know, 0 to 1.5.
Okay.
But The Bye Bye Man, Dark Signal from the UK, about a radio station. Again, it had its moments. A lot of these movies just fall apart at the end. Dead Awake, it could have been awesome, but then it just got ludicrous. Believe it or not, I mean, this movie had its, well, you know what? It's technically not listed as a horror, so I'm not even going to mention it.
Okay.
Raw, I know other people loved it like you. I had major issues, and you could check it out on the Raw show. The Void, man, it started off strong, and then it just, I don't know where it went. Double X, there were good elements in that anthology and others that weren't. And Bad Batch could have been something, but that's the one that's closely bordering the worst of the year list for me.
Okay. Well, I had a bunch that I would be like, these are like 3 out of 5s to me. It's like, I wouldn't discourage people from seeing them if they were curious about them, basically. And like 2s and the 2.5s, I'll get to them on the worst of show. I actually liked the Flatliners remake that came out this year, and I am definitely in the minority with that. I was not a big fan of the original film. You had a lot of pretty faces, you had some sort of heady ideas that were sort of the crux of the original film, but in the end it's like you have this mind-blowing concept, and then, well, what's the lesson? Oh, you must forgive in life.
What was this again?
This is the Flatliners remake.
Oh, geez, I refuse to see that.
But it's better. It's better than the Schumacher one.
Yeah, the Schumacher one. My crazy ex-girlfriend, who was a paramedic, just laughed her whole way through. They can't do that. That's stupid. And she, you know, that was it.
It's funny because on the Blu-ray, the director Niels Arden Oplev, who did The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the Swedish version, he's talking a lot about how he wanted this to be real, and I'm like, anyway. But I would still recommend the film. Ellen Page is great in it.
She's always great.
Yeah, and it's...
she's great on any page.
Yeah, it was pretty much... It was unexpected for me. I wasn't expecting a lot, and the reviews have been terrible. But if you're curious, I would say check it out. Gerald's Game. It was a banner year for Stephen King. I think he had at least four King adaptations between TV and film this year. I thought it was okay. The great Mike Flanagan of Hush and Oculus directed this one and co-wrote the script. I think it's a case where, you know, the acting is great. Did you see it?
Carla Gugino should freaking be best horror actress of the year.
Yeah, she was excellent. Bruce Greenwood, who I've always liked too.
Carla Gugino's delicious too.
Yeah, definitely.
Bruce Greenwood's delicious too.
Yeah, they make a delicious.
And I wanted that Kobe steak in there, man. Big time.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay.
See, I read the wrong list.
I know.
That's also on my, pretty good. The exposition at the end was ludicrous.
Well, you know what? This
ludicrous.
I'll say this, because years ago I read the book. I think it was a case of it is faithful to the book and including that follow-up, and that is the problem.
That's the problem. They should have pulled a Kubrick and, what he did with The Shining, he came up to his own interpretations, because I was like, why did they go there? And it just became a train wreck at the end.
No, and I felt the same way. It was like faithful really to a fault. Through no fault of the actors, it was just kind of like, you should have cut it at that one point.
I know what you mean too, yep.
And it's like from adaptation, it's like, God help you if you use voiceover narration in your movie. any idiot can use voiceover narration to express what the character's feeling.
It's
lazy, sloppy writing.
Yeah, it was heavy-handed.
Yeah, so I mean, it was good up to a point,
agreed.
Ultimately, it was a 3 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Bill, this may surprise you. Oh. I'm going to say Alien Covenant on my list of almost near misses. My opinion has changed a little bit from since when we did the show on it.
God, Johnny.
I'm sorry, not sorry, but
I can punch you in the head.
You can. Do what you got to do, Bill. Maybe it'll knock me in alignment here with my thinking.
Putting a chokehold.
But you know what? It's unlike Prometheus, which I found myself not thinking much about after seeing it. With Alien Covenant, I actually found myself thinking about it and not necessarily just the stuff that was wrong with it. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of stuff wrong with the movie.
Yes, there is.
You know, narratively, and in terms of chronology and all that sort of happy stuff. But in a sense, I think Ridley Scott got me thinking about his themes. You know, granted, they're very heavy-handed. And he still seems to want to make another Blade Runner film, even though we got a great Blade Runner film this year later on. But I think it's a better film. I appreciate that it's more action-based than Prometheus. Great cast. And some genuinely great scenes in it, I think, as well, which we went into detail with on our Alien Covenant show, Bethany from James Cullen Bresak. Did you see that one, Bill, yet? Or?
No.
Okay.
Damn it.
That's okay. It was actually, I watched it and I was pleasantly surprised by it. Tom Green, like you've never seen him before, as a marriage counselor. And also Shannon Doherty as a bad mommy.
That's right.
I was really taken with this. It's kind of done in a very experimental way. It's kind of like a possession haunted house type film, but the payoffs are kind of unexpected, which I liked. I think the two of us have seen way too many movies where, it's a haunted house, or someone's haunted by their past. Okay, how many ways can this possibly go? And Bresak, who I think he co-wrote the script as well, he did a really good job of, throwing some curveballs, at the viewer. So even for guys like us who were kind of jaded to this sort of thing because we've seen so much of it, I think I was like, that's good. I didn't see that coming, and that's how it should be. So I was happy about that. Pleasantly surprised. It's a nice little sleeper. You mentioned you didn't get to see MFA, Bill.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into too much about it. It did make me think of Ms. 45. And I Spit on Your Grave. Which are kind of like the grandmothers, if you will.
Ms. 45, man. Pow! Wow.
I haven't watched that one in years, honestly.
That's still awesome, man.
But I really like that. That is an exceedingly cruel film in its concept.
Yes, it is.
But I like it. It's very clever in that as well, with what it forces the filmmakers to do. MFA falls somewhere along its... I thought it was really powerful in the early going. Mm-hmm. And once you see it, Bill, I think you'll know what I mean.
Gotcha.
Because there are certain sequences that I think ring to a certain truth of the reality of campus rape. And as much as I've heard about it in the news and how college campuses tend to treat it or not treat it, you know, or try to like, oh, it's going to tarnish our reputation. We got to make it so... It's either didn't happen or it's not our fault or something.
Yeah,
I don't know, Bill.
It depends. With the school I'm at, they report them.
Oh, really?
Unfortunately, all the time. You know, like mm-hmm. You know, every couple of weeks or some sort of sexual assault or something like that.
Is this released like in like a?
It's released through for anybody who's on the email list for the entire school. Students get it, because they want to find these people and put them away.
Sure.
And, you know, when you have 8,000 students plus on campus, it's just by numbers. Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, something's going
to
happen.
You know? Yeah. So. Okay. Well, that's good to hear because, the way it's treated in that film, it's more like, it's like, oh, you're talking to like a counselor or someone like that or an administrator, and they're trying to like, they're like arguing semantics to try and get it so it's not... You know, oh, it's not the school's fault, or it's almost...
Oh, yeah,
it's almost,
it always is. It's like, oh, you let so-and-so into your room? Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, well, was it really your fault
that
you did this? And that, I think that's the... I think that's some of the powerful stuff in MFA. I didn't like it quite as much where it went as it went along, but I'd still recommend checking it out. That was like a 3 out of 5 for me, just because of the more powerful moments. Mm-hmm. XX, which you mentioned already, Bill.
That's sort of on my bad list. I mean, read the wrong list.
Well, it's okay. You can read it again. I mean, to me, that one was like it's an anthology for 4 separate films and a wraparound. I thought, I'm kind of with you, Bill. I thought it could have been really great. I think it was almost a bit too conservative. Like, it could have gone further, and it could have been perhaps more... I'm not saying it had to be aggressive, but it could have maybe been a bit more aesthetically and artistically daring.
I agree.
In where it went.
That's why it was only XX and not XXX.
Yeah, I was going to say. XXX, you're getting the...
Yeah,
XXX would be a hardcore anthology, Bill. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I think part of the reason I rated that one the way I did was because I would like to see them come up with a XXX or a XXX. You know, I wanted to keep going as an anthology idea, sort of like the VHS
from female horror,
or like the ABCs of Death. It's something I would like to see keep going, get new talent in, and see what they come up with. So I think there's a lot of potential in it. So, and my last one, which is sort of on the edge, it's one of the first horror films I saw in 2017, and I had like zero expectations for it, and I wound up having a really good time with it, was Resident Evil, The Final Chapter.
Oh, really?
Have you seen it?
No.
Okay.
You know why? I forgot which one did I see or not. I didn't, you know what I mean?
Well, they kind of blend together after a certain point.
They're all under that same umbrella. Right?
Oh, I'm going to slap you in the head now.
Thank you. Good night. Drive carefully.
Very unfunny.
That was awesome, man. You kidding? Best joke ever said.
But I actually enjoyed this when I saw it in the theater.
That's cool.
And it was hilarious because...
Mila Jovovich, baby.
Well, absolutely. I would love to meet her at a con or something like God. That. She, if Kate Beckinsale can do Monster Mania, why not Mila Jovovich?
Yeah.
Well, you'd have to get the hose out for you, Bill.
Oh, God. Again? I usually have to pay for that. But anyway, go ahead.
You put the money in the hand of the handler. Otherwise, you get the hose again.
Okay, no money for you.
But
sorry, go ahead.
But I actually enjoyed it. And it actually prompted me to revisit the rest of the series. Mm-hmm. I'd only watched the first 2 movies prior to the final chapter. And it made me go back and watch the rest of them. And actually, I liked almost all of the other ones too. So it's it's a very specific type of mentality I think you need to be in to appreciate Resident Evil, but they're just kind of fun movies. Don't put too much thought into them. And the final chapter has a lot of visual and aesthetic parallels to like Mad Max Fury Road. So what's not to like? And it made me think about Mila Jovovich, kind of like, you know, she was kind of Furiosa before Furiosa was even a thing.
Yeah.
So, in any case, Bill, those are films I would recommend to people with, you know, a degree of caution, not expect a masterpiece kind of thing. Do you have honorable mentions or some other lists stuff?
The list I should have read is my okay to decent list, and I'm just going to go through them, no explanations. Creep 2, Death Note, The Devil's Candy, which had a deplorable scene near the end that just like really derailed it.
We'll get into that on the worst.
I had a funny feeling we were.
Yeah.
Gerald's Game, Life, The Stakelander, also called Stakeland 2, which is a follow-up to the much-beloved Stakeland.
Jim Mickle, yeah.
Yep, had some issues. Residue, Cult of Chucky, and Cure for Wellness, which I thought was wonderful, but it had some issues too. But.
Can I ask you a question, Bill?
No.
What is Residue? Because I haven't even heard of that one.
Residue
is... Or what do you know about it?
Gosh, I can't even really remember. It's a Canadian film that had its moments, and I can't really recall offhand what the hell it was. no, I know it sounds really bad, but... okay, now I remember. Oh, yeah. Residue was actually interesting. It was about a private investigator. He reads a book of sinister origins, and he unknowingly puts his daughter and himself into a fight for their lives and their souls.
Okay.
It had sort of like an 80s feel to it, and it was cool to a point, but then it was also got bogged down within itself, in its own story. So it's not bad. I can't say I hate it. Starred James Clayton and Taylor Hickson. It definitely has its moments, it seemed like the story needed to be edited a bit more first.
Okay.
So.
All right. Yeah, we have some... Yeah, we have some overlap, Bill. Were those your honorable mentions, or do you have some honorable mentions?
No, those were them. The okay to decent ones.
Okay.
You know, now I just have my top five for the year.
Okay, because I've got a list of okay to decent as well.
Jeez.
Actually, like I said, some overlap. Cult of Chucky. I had fun with Cult of Chucky.
I did too, but yeah.
It brought to mind. And I'm sure Don Mancini, who's been with the series since the beginning, whether he's been writing and, you know, now he's directing and writing.
He's a good guy.
No, I think, you know what? I want to play with Don Mancini.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway.
Get arrested for that.
I want my Don Mancini doll, damn it. I kind of like how the Chucky films are becoming sort of a family affair, because Fiona Dourif, Brad Dourif's daughter, has been in the last two.
Yep.
So, and I think she's a very interesting chip-off dad block in certain ways. So that's cool. I had fun with that. Life, like you mentioned, Bill. Mm-hmm. I think some people were surprised by that one because it was like... It came out before Alien Covenant, but I think after Alien Covenant came out, I think people gravitated more towards towards that one.
Mm-hmm. Cute. That was really cute, Johnny.
But I think that one was efficient, you know. It was just like,
the ending was awesome.
Oh, God, yeah.
Great ending.
That was like, and I did not see it coming.
Nope.
It totally...
Well, I knew, I was like, oh, and then, but the end with one of the characters in the water was, I was like, oh, I hate when that happens.
Well, and it's like you're trying to communicate something to people and they're like, what are you saying?
No, we're trying to save you.
Yeah, exactly. We can't
save it. We're going to save... I hate when that happens.
But I thought it was perfect. And I watched it a second time and I was like, it still worked for me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good call.
So,
it's a good one.
Yeah, it was just a really efficient thing in space, chip off alien block kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like Flubber in space, and Flubber's not nice.
Yeah, no Jerry Lewis, though.
No Jerry Lewis.
Rest in peace, but yeah. Yes. I know we're going to disagree, Bill, but the Belko experiment,
I forgot all about that piece of crap. That was 2000. I thought that was 2016.
That came out in like March.
Really?
Yeah. And I saw it in the theater. I saw it in the theater. Hey, I'll say this about it. Better James Gunn wrote the script to this one. I would rather watch the Belko experiment than fucking $300 million worth of nothing that was Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Okay.
You might agree with that.
I can't argue with that one.
Okay. All right. Some great acting in it. I mean,
John C. McGinley.
And Tony
Michael Rooker.
Tony Golden was great in it, too. Yeah, and you had a what's-his-face, Michael Gallagher from 10 Cloverfield Lane was the main guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that one. It's a very pessimistic film about humanity, but I didn't have a problem with that. I can kind of relate a bit to that. So, this is one of the last ones I watched, Bill, before this show. Did you see House on Willow Street?
No,
you didn't see it.
Never heard of it.
Heard of it? Okay.
Did now.
I'll describe it this way.
Uh-oh.
In a weird way, it's like the movie The Evil Dead remake should have been.
Whoa.
But it's also a hybrid of sort of like a crime thriller.
Cool, man.
So it's it's almost like an amalgamation of those two Fede Alvarez movies. Like, wow. Don't Breathe and Evil Dead had a baby kind
of. Don't Breathe. Overrated!
I loved it.
Oh my God! The whole forget it. Do we have to go there?
But
again?
The thing is,
What about the thing?
You know, movie. Yeah, of course. Well, that was you're a bit late, Bill. It was 35 fucking years ago.
Damn.
Yeah, but anyway. House on Willow Street has Sharni Vinson. Yeah. Who we both have our feelings about Your Next.
She was the best part.
But she was the best part, and she's sort of continuing her. Her tenure as sort of a Zoe Bell style badass.
Oh, and I love Zoe Bell.
Absolutely.
Who I met, who's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's nice. Yeah. Totally friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Cure for Wellness, also on my list.
Mm-hmm.
I have to give it credit because it was a big budget Universal movie from Gore Verbinski, who is most well known for the Pirates of the Caribbean films. I think it was sheer utter insanity that they gave him however much they gave him to make this very 2.5 hours of just craziness. Audiences responded in unkind to it at the box office. And I haven't seen it since I saw it in the theater, but I just remember being like, this is just, the visuals were awesome. The story is a bit of a kind of what you've come to expect from like gothic kind of storytelling. It was a bit like The Haunting, a bit like Suspiria, and a bit like a bunch of other movies.
Suspiria, never heard of it.
I'm gonna send you a ticket to the Swiss Alps, Bill.
Cool. Good. I'm coming back. See ya.
I always thought you'd make a good ballerina. In all honesty,
I just want to yell Ricola from a mountaintop.
No, I just want to see you dressed like Julie Andrews, like spinning around in a circle.
Dude, I've done that.
Have you?
Yeah.
In the Alps. Sure.
Not in the Alps, but in the Appalachians.
Ah, all right.
Sure got a pretty mouth.
The hills are alive with the sound of Billy Crash. But I dug A Cure for Wellness. Prevenge from Alice Lowe. Have you seen Prevenge, Bill?
No, that was another one on my list.
You should check it out.
I will.
It's in sort of a similar vein as Sightseers.
Okay.
But Alice Lowe was in that film, and she wrote and directed this one, and it's about essentially a mother who is drawn to murder by the voice of her unborn child. It is very funny. It is very dark.
Kill them, mommy.
Yeah, it's almost like that, yeah. But I enjoyed it a lot. I was pleasantly surprised by it. The Girl with All the Gifts.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, forgot about that one, too, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't read the book it was based on, but it was adapted by the guy who wrote the book, so I'm assuming it hews pretty close.
Glenn Close.
No. Less
in her first horror film.
Too Close for Comfort, yeah. Mm. She's great, as is Sienna Nenua, who is the titular girl with all the gifts. She's displayed very prominently on the poster art.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, but she is definitely a breakout performer and one to watch. Definitely be seeing more of her in the future. And it's just a nice, I thought it was a nice fresh spin on
zombieism, you know, zombie subculture.
Yeah, and Bill, considering how tired zombies have become, like Walking Dead has run it into the ground.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it's more like the shuffling, shambling.
The shuffling of the story.
The ready to crawl dead. Oh, they're just like stretching this out.
I'll full disclosure, I have not watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. I know.
Wow, dead air.
Throwing my heart.
Hey, there's a lot of crap I do for this show.
I appreciate it, Bill. I thought Bill, you were like, maybe I watched like three episodes and stuff.
Season six was my favorite.
Okay.
Anyway, go ahead, man.
In any case, Olivier Assayas's Personal Shopper, which is considered a horror film.
Dixie Ferry said she wants her 2 hours
back. Oh my god, and Kim usually never gets so pissed off at stuff. I was
she's wrangled, man.
She was wrangled. She was vehement in her dislike of the film, and I'm like, hey, that's cool.
Totally.
I can see how people would not like the film, and Assayas is kind of a difficult cat to pin down, I'd say. You saw Demon Lover, right, Bill?
Demon Lover! Yeah, I did.
The final Demon Lover. well, I know Dave Kay hated Demon Lover. He at least didn't like it. But Personal Shopper is just really good performance from Kristen Stewart. Again, it's sort of like a haunted house, haunted person kind of film, but it's done in such an unconventional way.
Mm-hmm. Am I going to end up loving this movie? And, oh, geez.
Yeah.
I better not watch it.
Yeah. I should have brought my copy. I would have loaned it to you. But it's just, yeah, it's just kind of, Assayas deals in a very specific pace and mm-hmm. a very specific type of storytelling, and it's not reliant on the stuff you associate with haunted houses
right.
or possession films. So you kind of got to not steel yourself, but just kind of be prepared for not what you'd see like from James Wan or, whatever, Insidious or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not the same type of, not the same type of league whatsoever. So, and I got one more, Bill.
God.
And some of these, seriously, some of these, if it had been a slower horror year or a less good horror year, these would have been like, some of these would have been in my top five.
Damn.
It's just been such a fucking good year in horror, and I don't know how you feel about it, just in general.
It's been a good year in horror.
I don't have
any that made my super awesome list. Maybe Get Out. I have to see Get Out again, maybe.
Okay, alright.
And there's another one, but that I'll mention. But
well,
I've run into a lot of disappointments,
okay.
Well, man.
I'm
including the disappointments room, and that was from another year.
Well, I'm saying, like, if you put bad or disappointment in your title, you're like already got 1 foot. You've already dug like 3 feet in the grave, basically.
Yeah,
you know, you just may as well just throw yourself in and start covering yourself with dirt. But the last one I have on my honorable mentions is The Eyes of My Mother.
Honorable mention.
Yeah, it was kind of tough, but I had to cut it.
Holy shit!
From my top five, because like I said, Bill, there were Eyes of My Mother is a 4 out of 5
Damn.
For me.
Yeah, holy cow.
Brilliant, loved it.
Brilliant, yeah. We talked about it.
Great.
Check out that show.
Great use of black and white, and you'd probably agree with this, Bill. Not unlike Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, a really good use.
That would be a great double feature. Those two.
Yeah, those two. Just for how to do black and white.
Black and white right.
Yeah. All is not black and white in those movies.
Exactly.
But that's I loved how complicated that movie was. Just
it was awesome
morally, and the characters were. I thought the main character was fascinating. The
acting, all of it,
and just very disturbing. Yeah, and just there was some very disturbing stuff done with like sound and
yes, and the tone was so heavy.
The scene where that freaky guy visits the house.
Yeah.
And oh my god. Yeah. And that's like near the beginning of the movie too. So yeah,
that's a must watch.
Oh, I would say for most people, I'd be like, just go out and buy that fucking thing. Blind by that damn movie. It is that good. It'll get under your skin.
Jeez.
So yeah, Bill, those are my honorable mentions.
Yeah,
and do you have five? Do you have five for the
top? Yeah, I have five for best.
Well, since I've been yapping.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, why don't you, as I tend to, I'll enter, do we want to, like, alternate here, Bill?
Yeah.
We start at 5 and work up to 1.
Yeah, this is my these are all movies that are in 4 territory, or you know, 3.5. Or this one actually, it's probably going. You know what? This is a 4 one.
Okay.
I love anytime I see a movie and it says, you know, made in a horror film, you know, made in Ireland. It's like it's automatic for me.
Grabbers.
I would say, well, you know, Grabbers, Wakewood, Isolation.
Isolation was good too. Yeah.
Every time I see a horror film from Ireland, they just got it down. You know, they really do for the world. Yeah. I've only seen 2 that are crappy. Percentage-wise, they lead the world for quality.
Yeah.
You know, and this one stars Catherine Walker and Steve Oram, and it's called The Dark Song, which was released in 2017. And it's about, and it's excellent, psychological, a bit of supernatural, a woman. Who lost her, let's put it this way. A woman is joining forces with an occult leader to reconnect with someone who has passed on. And it's called The Dark Song, and it's just really wonderful, gripping, engaging, excellent dialogue, excellent interchange between the characters. Well done, written and directed by Liam Gavin. It just has a great feel to it. There wasn't anything like, you know, this was just like a tight drama with, you know, really good psychological elements, and I really enjoyed it. And Don Reamer from Airworthy.com said, Bill, this is the one you need to see, and he wasn't wrong. So you have 2 people in a house, and what can happen? A lot. A lot when you're trying to conjure maybe spiritual forces. And so it's very cool if you like those, you know, those intimate, isolated horror films that are adult mm-hmm. and dramatic. This is the one.
It sounds a little, am I overshooting here, Bill? Because I haven't seen it. Mm. Is it a little like The Changeling then? Would you compare it to? Or is
no,
it,
no. Okay. I saw a horror film that was a Changeling ripoff that really pissed me off, and I think that'll be coming up in Lovely. Our worst films.
It sounds like A Dark Song almost might be along the lines of something like A Personal Shopper or something like that, and then it's a bit more psychological.
Yeah, well, the cool thing about it was I didn't say, oh, I didn't sit there going, oh, I've seen this one before.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you know, like, oh, wishing you could speak to somebody deceased. Yeah, we've seen that, but this is so,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't compare it to any other movie, which is what I really enjoyed.
Did it resist, like, cliches, Bill, and stuff like that? Like, loud sound effects and crap like that, or?
Oh, yeah, it wouldn't be on this list if it had.
I figure you'd be throwing a fit about it.
I'd be like, son of a bitch! You suck! Why'd you ruin the movie? Like, Devil's Candy with that ending, and like.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I can't wait. All right, go ahead.
You know what? I swapped these 2 out, actually. So I'm going to go with, and it did come out proper and limited release back in February of this year. And I know you've seen this one, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
It's The Lore.
Oh, my God. I forgot to mention that. That's great, insane shit.
That's Why don't you say something about The Lore, Bill? Because you saw this months before I did.
I saw it on the big screen.
Where did you see it in
Seattle, the Emerald City? And I'm like,
well, that's awesome, though. Yeah.
What the hell is this trippy, surreal?
Is it a Polish movie?
Commentary? Yeah. Okay. Oh my God! I thought it was, I didn't realize it was 2000. I thought I had it for 2016.
We can talk about it.
Yeah. Man, it was just wild about.
mermaids,
yeah, 2 young mermaids, and cabaret, uh-huh. and things, a little alcohol, and what other things?
Shark teeth are involved.
Very quite sharp. And
mythology figures into it heavily as well.
Yeah, and man, talk about the characters and where they were headed, because these were sisters.
Yep, they were.
And man, it's like, you know, entering a new world, and for them, and it's interesting, like, when people enter our new world, you know, you a lot of people want to assimilate to that new world, and other people are like, no, I can't, I'm sticking to the old ways, and that's exactly what you got.
Yeah, Yeah.
And that was a blast.
Well, and you also have, like, relationship troubles, too. It's like, well, what if the sisters are jealous of each other and there's a boy or something like that? Sure, so
there's always, a, you know, somebody with a penis to ruin things.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, how you doing?
But even that is done really interestingly,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, it's not, you bastard. Yeah, it's not. My computer's just doing its thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was great. There were definitely no cliche elements about it. Some people call it Lynchian.
Yeah.
You know, to a degree, and I could see that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I was really, I knew you'd mentioned it, Bill, to me, but you didn't tell me what you thought of it. So when I watched it, I wasn't like thinking, oh, Bill loves this. I was thinking just, oh, Bill.
Oh, I really, really
like it. Yeah, I was like, Bill saw it, so now I'm seeing it. And it's part of the Criterion Collection, so I mean...
Already?
Well, that's what it came out on, just...
Holy crap!
In fall, it came out on, like, in the Criterion Collection.
So it's like Hall of Fame for, like, football. You gotta wait 10 years until you stop playing a game, you know?
Yeah,
like,
unless you're Wes Anderson, you usually don't get... Or Olivier Assayas, whose films got on the Criterion Collection. But I was looking at the cover of it, and I was like, it's a little cartoonish, kind of. It's of, like, sort of... I was like, is it, like, Splash or something like that? No, it's not like Splash.
And not at all.
I was... Yeah, it's like from the moment it started, I was like, where's this? I was like,
where is it? What is this? Where's it going?
Trying to get a handle on it, and you don't. You just, it's one of those movies where you're either going to be sucked into it from the get-go, or you're going to be turned off by it. And I was like totally, I was engaged.
I was lured in.
Oh, I got the hook stuck in my lip for like an hour and 40 minutes, and I was just, I totally fell in love with it. The songs,
yeah.
It's like a musical. The way it's choreographed, it's almost like how a Broadway production would be choreographed, kind of. It's like the songs are used to develop the characters. The camera will move and follow the characters through rooms while they're singing and stuff is happening.
Great cinematography. It's set design.
Very
costumes.
Yeah, it's very colorful.
It's fantastic. It's like everybody associated with the production poured their heart and soul into it.
And I love it. I like want the soundtrack as much as I want the movie proper, honestly. Because even though it's in Polish, I'm like, I'd listen. Those songs are catchy as fuck in there.
Yeah, they are.
And it's just like, even though the lyrics are like very bizarre and kind of like, we were talking about the William Burroughs like cut up thing before the show. It's like, they're kind of like that, but still they convey a lot character-wise. And story-wise. So I really loved it. It's very offbeat, but it definitely has those horror elements.
Yeah, I'm glad I saw it on a big screen.
I would have loved that.
Awesome presentation at the Seattle International Film Festival at SIFF. I could
imagine how people were reacting to that movie.
It was cool. You know, it's an art house horror.
It really is.
For real.
Yeah.
Good one, man.
Yeah.
Damn.
So what do you got for number four, Bill?
Number four for me? I'm not going to talk about it because we've done a show on it. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It is, it was, you know, it's a Scooby Gang coming of age horror film. Oh my gosh. Andy Muschietti, he worked really hard to reincorporate a lot of Stephen King-ism back into the original script that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it before, I'm going to say it again, the way he directs kids, he could be easily the next Steven Spielberg. You know, taking over that mantle.
Yeah.
Bill Skarsgård, he reinterpreted Skarsgård.
The storm just blew me away.
Yeah. He did a great reimagining of Pennywise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he owns it just as much as the great Tim Curry owns the miniseries version.
Yeah.
I think comparing the two of them would be foolish.
Both of them, sorry, Bill, are very distinct performances.
Absolutely correct. Yeah,
there's no imitation going on with Skarsgård.
And, you know, if you're a Stranger Things fan, you got to see Finn Wolfhard once again, and he killed it as Richie, you know, like, this is a dick measuring contest. I mean, it was great. And it was great. I really enjoyed the ride. So we did a show on it. Check it out. Check out our show on it.
Yeah, back in September. Yeah,
back in our September. Yeah, so go there.
Yeah, Bill. You know what? Here's for me. It was a good year for horror. Mm-hmm. For you, it wasn't a good year for horror. I saw it 4 times in the theater, and it did not crack my top five. How about that?
You didn't even mention it.
I forgot it. It was on my. This works out fine though, because it's like, but it's like what you said. I agree with everything, Bill. It's a film that I appreciate in different ways each time I've seen it. So I look forward to continue watching it through the years.
It's just that if I see one more movie with some losers group and bullying, I'm gonna like do something different or just like, come on, man. It's a trope now.
Yeah.
It's like this equation that may or may not exist. You can have a geeky, nerdy kid that's respected in school. Like, please, man.
Yeah.
Shit, Jumanji even had that.
I haven't seen Jumanji.
Jumanji's fun.
Yeah. I will say this, Bill, for what it's worth, the novel was published in 86.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole bullying thing is pulled right from the novel.
No.
And,
yeah.
And I mean, it's kind of like splitting hairs at this point.
I know, but you see so much, it's like, it's oversaturated and yeah, you know, it doesn't mean, you know, I mean,
well,
I'm not going to give it a disclaimer. I don't need to, you know, bullying is bullshit. You know, I hate it.
Yeah.
But, it's like, does every movie have to have a bullied kid in it?
Yeah.
It's like, it was like at one point, here's the black sidekick and then here's the gay sidekick. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, can't we, like, instead of like forcing this stuff in there, can't we do it in a nice natural fashion and make really well-rounded characters that aren't tokens?
Yeah. I think my problem, Bill, is like when filmmakers, like writers and directors do that just for the sake
so
of...
So can try.
Just for the sake of representation and not because they want to
build
not
real inclusion.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like they want to be, they want the diversity tag, but you know, if it's just a shallow character, then it's no better than if that character hadn't been in the film in the first place.
Exactly.
You know, so that's, yeah, that's the double-edged sword behind that. Cause I know there's a real like, oh, everything needs to be, you know,
mm-hmm.
we need to include X, Y, and Z, you know, mm-hmm. type of person in this film. I'm not going to talk about my number four too much, except to say I loved it, and you did not, Bill.
Oh.
And you can listen to our recent show on Raw.
Oh, so overrated.
All I'm going to say is more great things will come from...
Yes, they will.
Writer-director Julia Ducournau.
Yes, I love her, man. But come on, I really wanted to love the movie, but there was a couple things that were just like way out of whack.
Yeah, which you complained at length about in our show.
Fuck you.
I love this movie.
Yeah.
I'm joining the chorus of proud people who love this movie. Also, Garance Marier and Ella Rumpf, two actresses to watch out for. I'm concerned that Hollywood will...
No!
Well, yeah.
Hollywood's dead.
I was going to say...
Hollywood's destroying
itself. If they could be like, you know, like an Ellen Page or a Kristen Stewart and be doing like interesting art house stuff, I don't want them to turn up as like window dressing in a Marvel movie.
I don't think that's going
to happen. Yeah, but they are two fantastic actresses to keep an eye out for, regardless of how you feel about the film.
Right.
But yeah, I loved it. Loved the themes. Loved how it was executed. And I can't wait to watch it again. Sorry, Bill.
You know what? Maybe I need to see it again just to say, no, I was right. I love it. Oh, I love it.
I expect a retraction if you watch it a second time and you like it.
You know, there will be one, but that's not going to happen. Anyway, you know.
Not that kind of retraction.
Yeah, I'll retract this. Sorry, I'm such a bad person.
Retract the tractor,
There were two babysitter-type movies out this year. One I'll talk about on my worst show.
Uh-oh.
That some people seem to put on a pedestal and it definitely doesn't fucking deserve
it. Oh, I wonder if that's the same one on mine.
I hope so.
Okay, I hope
anyway,
so, too.
Anyway, the one I did love and enjoy immensely that I saw just this week, and I had a wonderful fun romp thrill ride with it, was the comedy horror from Netflix, The Babysitter, starring... the lovely, the vivacious Samara Weaving, with Judah Lewis, who plays a young boy who's being babysat by the babysitter of his dreams, B, and B is Sarah, Samara Weaving. But things go awry. It has an 80s feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's action-filled. Of course, and they mix, and I'm giving all the credit in the world to Mick G, who directed it, and written by the great Brian Duffield.
Mm-hmm.
an excellent, superb balance of action, suspense, and comedy.
Okay.
They weaved it all together correctly, beautifully. It almost had like a, what the heck was that? It almost had
you've sorry got about mail, the thing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh no, AOL contacts me from beyond the grave. Yeah. It almost had like, I was like, this is how I like the rhythm, like Evil Dead 2.
Oh, okay.
You know, to a degree. It had great pace, great colors. It was just really cool atmosphere. A cool story, a unique twist on the great thematic value, but a great twist on the whole babysitter, you know, things gone awry type of thing. A lot of fun. It was a blast. I enjoyed it. That one hour, I don't know, hour and a half went by in like 10 minutes for me. It was just wonderful.
Nice.
And it was really beautifully directed. McGee did a kick-ass job. And it was, I was just so fun.
Excellent.
So fun.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, please.
I know, I think Bill Meeker liked it. He wrote a review of it.
He wrote one where he liked the other one. I'm going to rip the freaking shreds as soon as we get to
I wonder if we're thinking of the same one. Well, I guess we'll...
Better watch out, Johnny.
Well, I'm looking... Like I said at the beginning of the show, I have not seen The Babysitter, but just looking at the poster, which is on your computer right now, it's just totally bathed in neon and that whole 80s feel.
It's great. It's a blast. Check your brain at the door. Get a smile on your face. Eat some popcorn. Enjoy the gore. Enjoy the blood spatter. enjoy the lessons learned in it. You know, the whole thematic element is really cool, and it all adds up to something really wonderful.
That's good though, because I know whenever I hear like, oh, it has an 80s feel, I immediately brace myself for nostalgia and not much else, kind of, which with a lot of movies these days.
Yeah, but
days.
This I would say 80s feel in regard to some of the atmosphere of it and some of the coloring. And yeah, it definitely has that.
Okay. All right, cool.
I can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's streaming on Netflix right now.
Streaming, baby!
Yeah.
Netflix nailed it with this one, man. Because I've seen some bad Netflix. I've seen some excellent Netflix thing. I mean, they're putting out so much content. And the great thing, they're...
Bright.
I haven't watched it. I'm afraid to.
Yeah.
But the wonderful thing about Netflix is all I keep hearing is this. In a world where studios just control artists and everything that they want to do, if Netflix likes something, they give them the money and they're like, have at it.
Yeah.
And that's why so many of the things that Netflix produces has a distinct voice. And that comes from the great Chris Messineo at New Jersey Film School. And, and he said it well. And it was like, yeah, you know, then it dawned on me, it's like, he's absolutely correct. So Netflix is, when they say original content, you know, original from Netflix, it really is original because they're not micromanaging.
Yeah, so, and you get an uncompromised vision,
absolutely,
basically.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
for better or worse.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for that, definitely, considering how, like you said, Bill, the Hollywood system is more like a clamp down and compromise.
It's all about it's all about money, money, money. And the funny thing is, Netflix... I mean, they could have their own friggin' channel or anything they want.
Yeah.
And you know what? They're killing it.
Yeah.
They're killing it because they're allowing these writers, directors, and actors and all to run amok and to create really cool, unique things, which they do for many shows outside of horror and everything. Ozark. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've seen some clunkers on Netflix, but you know, me and my girlfriend watched 13 Reasons Why earlier this year, and that was interesting. It had its problems, but... Yeah, yeah. It's anything else. It's like the marketplace, basically. They have a marketplace of stuff for you to choose from, and that's good. It's all about choice.
Oh, yeah.
My number three movie, Bill, and I don't think you've seen it.
Okay.
Is Yorgos Lanthimos's The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Holy crap, what the hell's that?
You must see it! You must see it.
The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Holy
Bill,
shit.
You know Mr. Lanthimos because he directed a movie you like a lot, Dogtooth.
Oh my god!
It's the new movie from him.
Holy crap.
Yeah, and this is like his attempt at a horror film, and I would say he's pretty goddamn successful.
Dogtooth should be a horror film, man.
I would lump it in as a horror film.
Didn't we do a show where we talked about non-horror movies that should be horror?
I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's been a lot of shows.
What is this,
man?
260 episodes?
Something like that.
Holy crap.
You can't expect me to keep track of everything. But
man, we're really fucking
old.
goofs. We're freaking nerds, man. We're old. Shut up, Pinhead.
Old. I have such sights to show you, Bill.
God, I've heard that before.
I had the privilege of this came to my local art house. I'm lucky enough to have a local art house theater, and I saw it twice because I liked it so much.
Oh man!
Well, liked in the what's the sense, Bill?
You didn't call me.
I didn't. You want to drive 2 hours to see it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Next time.
Yeah, that's what they
want. I think it's coming out on Blu-ray and DVD in January, mm-hmm. so you don't have long to wait. Mm-hmm. But it's very unconventional. It was kind of marketed. A24 put it out, Bill, and I think we've talked in the past about how A24 has a problem marketing its movies.
Yes, they do.
And this one, I would say they kind of come close with this one. They keep enough of it, of the story, ambiguous,
mm-hmm.
while kind of just letting the images speak to themselves. And there's a couple of praise blurbs intercut in the trailer,
okay.
which don't really tell you anything.
Right, right.
But it is kind of like a revenge saga, but it is very, almost goes to sort of a metaphysical place with it.
Awesome, man.
Great cast.
I know, I'm looking.
Check it out right now. Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman. After they were in The Beguiled this year, which I also loved, yeah. It's not a horror film, but they're continuing a great winning streak for 2017. I love the two of them in this film. They're playing husband and wife, nice. very odd relationship, and very odd relationship with their kids.
Colin Farrell, you lucky bastard.
Yeah, and there's this stranger who sort of figures in, sort of a stranger, played by Barry Keoghan, who mm-hmm. everybody saw in Dunkirk earlier this year. But there's
Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah. And I was like, I didn't even know she was in it prior to seeing it. I was like, is that her? And it was her, but it's a very interesting film, very art house feel to it, where things kind of develop as they go along. So you have to have patience. And you know, the way people are today, it's like, oh, well, just give me like every 5 minutes, give me an explosion or something.
Yeah, as soon as you say art house, we need to do a show on art house horror and explain what it is. And
yeah, it's not a 4-letter word. Yeah,
no, it's not. It's about it's like six or seven, or eight
words.
I can't
like find six letters.
Art house. Yeah, art who gives a next?
I'm at the fart house. Yeah. So anyway, it's a really good film. The less you know about it, the better. The one trailer for it that I've watched is very eerie, but the other trailer for it, I think, gives a bit too much away. So
I'm not watching.
It's probably better not to watch any of the trailers. And like I said, I think it's coming out in January on disc, and it'll probably be out sooner on digital.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep that in mind. I think anybody who missed it or wasn't fortunate enough to be able to have a theater near them playing it, it's definitely worth checking out. It's a film that I'm still thinking about, and I saw it back in early November.
So. I'm still thinking about The Babysitter.
Well, there you go, man. Sign of success right there. Yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, and also the score is fantastic to Killing of a Sacred Deer. I went out of my way to pick it up. It's just so jarring and so... very awkward, like a lot of the encounters in the film.
And Yorgos did The Lobster, which a lot of people love as well.
I thought it was okay. I want to rewatch that based on Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Gotcha.
So, anyway, Bill.
All right. So, my number two for the year, and this was tough because I keep going back and forth
mm-hmm.
with this other movie that neither one of us have mentioned yet. So, anyway.
Uh-oh.
Nicholas Pesci's wrote and directed The Eyes of My Mother, which I feel disturbing, engaging.
Yeah.
Diana Agostini played the mother. She was fantastic. Olivia Bond played young Francesca, Francisca rather. And man, Kika Magali is just...
Yeah, she's fantastic.
She is. She's amazing. It's dark, foreboding. The sense of suspense just permeates from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
It has such a phenomenal pace, and
it's less than an hour and 20 minutes too.
Yeah, it's an hour 16.
It's a short movie. Yeah,
it's short, but man, it hits you right between the eyes and
whips right by. Yeah,
and that's another one I can't get out of my head. This is just the sense of foreboding, the music in there. We talked about it. Check out our show on the Eyes of My Mother.
Yeah.
And because I don't need to repeat myself, but that was just mind numbing.
And Bill, yeah, like you said, it's a really thematically rich film. It's not just
yes,
there's shocking stuff in it, but it's not just aiming for just shock value.
Exactly.
You know, there's something to it, and I think it's very beautiful and very horrific at the same time. So, so I agree with you.
Some scenes you won't get out of your head.
Oh yeah, yeah, heavy with the symbolism too. So yeah,
quite.
Okay, Bill. Well, I have a feeling this is going to be your number one one.
It depends on the moment.
So okay. All right. Well,
go ahead. I know what you're doing.
Well, you do know what I'm doing?
I think I do now.
just
get out, John. Just get out.
No, you get out of here, man. Just
I live here.
Bill's like, this is my house. well, this is partially
border.
Yeah. Well, you have more rights to say get out than I have to say.
I know. That's why I said it.
So, okay. I'll get out then, Bill. Okay. All right. Get out. We did a show. We did a show on it back in February. You had a very, I know you had a good experience with it. Well, not a good experience, but it was a very animated theatrical experience you had.
Quite. Very, yeah, very emotional.
I got to watch it a second time recently with my girlfriend, mm-hmm. whom you know, and I think she said something along the lines of she didn't like it, but I think she felt like, not in the sense of, oh, I like that movie because it made me feel good or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like you could admire it, liking it's a different thing. But
respecting it.
Yeah, and we managed to have a conversation about certain aspects of it that we didn't even bring up on our mm-hmm. show, which to me was like, that's the sign of a good filmmaker is when you can
loaded with details.
See, yeah, why don't you say something?
Oh God, I don't know.
You did a presentation on it.
Yeah, at an academic conference, EAPSU conference in the fall. And as I'm doing my thing, I'm thinking of more things in it, you know. Mm-hmm. Talked about, it's about a young man who's ensnared in, beautiful acting, everything, who's ensnared in this, he doesn't know he's ensnared. He thinks he's going to meet a black gentleman, going to meet his white girlfriend's family,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not what he expected in any way, shape, or form.
Nope.
And it's just riveting. It's if you love the socially conscientious Twilight Zones from Rod Serling and Jerome Bixby and Richard Matheson, this falls right in there. As soon as I saw it, I was like, man, Rod Serling would be proud. Because it is. It's an extended Twilight Zone episode that just punches a whole bunch of buttons.
Yeah. Something I love, Bill, about the film is that it just seamlessly broaches like so many different themes and so many different hot button subjects that are
cultural appropriation and on, you know,
colonialism, even
slavery.
Yeah. It like really is like, oh, well, this stuff still is really mm-hmm. unfortunately very valid. And I thought it was great because, you know, you said Rod Serling was also really good with the minutiae of the story and the details. And that's why I'm like, when they said Jordan Peele's going to be spearheading a new incarnation of the Twilight Zone, I'm like, perfect.
Perfect guy.
Perfect, yeah. Because I was like, Jordan Peele's like known for comedy. Who knew?
Not anymore!
Yeah, I was like, I like look at this and I'm like, you know, oh, hey, it's in competition as a comedy at the Golden Globes. Bullshit, but I'm like, no, this is like a really detail rich, very timely.
Timely
film.
Blew me away.
Yeah,
blew me away when I saw it.
Yeah, I really liked it more on the second go round. Bill, it went from a 4 to a 4.5 for me.
Wow!
After watching,
I can't imagine what your number one is now.
Well,
keep you might as well just go because I'm done. I mean, Get Out was my number one for the year.
Aww.
So this is apparently something that I either didn't see. Or I think you're crazy as bonkers for mentioning.
You might have just forgotten about it, Bill. And it did come out. I have it down here. March 31, limited in the U.S.
Oh,
was Oz Perkins? Oz Perkins, the Black Coat's daughter.
I know. I didn't mention it at all.
You didn't. I'm upset by that.
I'm sorry. I wouldn't put that as my number one.
Mm. But well, yeah, I know you put Get Out.
Well, we talked about this too.
Yeah, we did a double feature show on Black Coat's Daughter and Split back in, I think it was June. So you can go back and listen to more detailed conversation about it.
Absolutely.
This one is another one like Killing of a Sacred Deer that just got stuck up in my head and stayed there. I'm sort of afraid to rewatch it, even though I picked up the Blu-ray.
Wow.
I did pick up the soundtrack on vinyl, which I hardly ever do with anything. But great movie. Very full of wintry atmosphere and unease. Great performances. Kiernan Shipka, Lucy Boynton.
James Remar.
And Emma Roberts and Lauren Holly.
Yep, all of them.
Again, it's like one of those movies like I said, Killing of a Sacred Deer, Get Out, where you don't know the full story from the get-go. It's really well written.
No geckos were harmed in the making of this film. Sorry,
go
ahead.
Oh, shit. I'm not a gecko. I'm Geico.
Just endorsed.
I'm a caveman. But it's.
Oh, I missed those commercials.
I missed the TV show. Why didn't they renew that show? I don't know why.
The whole thing went
Yeah, I know. But no, it's a movie that I really loved.
I know you did.
It really took me, and it was a very traditional kind of storytelling and filmmaking, I thought, without like drawing attention to itself in such a way. It really subsisted on the atmosphere and suspense and character. And I thought it had some
excellent performances.
Yeah, really. And it had some excellent things to say about like the nature of belief, the nature of faith that ties into the greater horror of things. Yeah, just everything in that film was like a standout to me. Elvis Perkins did the score, which is so off kilter and off beat.
Yeah,
that's why I wanted it for myself, because it was just so jarring and so unsettling, like the rest of the film. Yeah, the aesthetics are beautiful. And
yeah,
it's a beautiful film, and you might want to look away from it at times, but you can't, because it just pulls you in so fully and completely.
A great take on a horror subgenre, very new, very very cool. So I liked it.
Yeah,
in that regard, yeah,
absolutely. That was.
I think this is the movie that Greg Palko said, "Yeah, oh man, the Black Hood's Daughter Johnny, I'll probably love it." I think it's one of those things, man. I could be wrong.
No, I think you mentioned.
Yeah,
that
I did.
Show.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry, Greg. Sorry, not sorry.
But today I saw a tweet from Dixie Ferry herself, Kim McDonald. She was like, Get Out, hands down, number one horror film of the year. So, I mean, it's hard to argue.
No, I think a lot of people are feeling the same way about that. And I'd be interested to, I don't know, have they announced, I know we feel whatever about it. But
Get Out 2 Electric Boogaloo?
No, the Oscars, though.
The Oscars? No, that probably comes out in January because the Oscars
are in
February.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if anything had come out about that. It would be interesting to see if that got some sort of recognition outside of like a technical
category. For horror, I could see maybe Best Original Screenplay. I could see it getting that.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood is its own bizarro, incestuous mistress.
That's true.
So.
And it's like sometimes they'll give you like, they'll be like, oh, here's the gimme. Like, you can have a technical, like a technical nod or something like that. But we're not going to acknowledge it was a good
best
story.
Use of tea in a film goes to.
That should be a category. Yeah. Every time I'm stirring creamer in my coffee now, I'm like, oh, shit. And I start to make the sound with the spoon. So.
Oh, man. That sucks.
So, Bill.
So, Johnny.
Any final thoughts on the good of the year of 2017?
There's so many more I need to see still. I mean, I only saw about 30. I think you saw a little bit more than I did. And
it seems like it,
It's still like that's just breaking it. And there's so movies with limited release, regional, foreign.
Well, then there's some stuff that won't come out till next year. Anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the sucky part, So
unless you're getting invited to like Cannes or Sundance or something, or TIFF,
Right.
It's like,
Yeah.
Hey, are you guys listening? Send us some passes. Come on.
Please.
We demand.
We demand.
We demand to be heard. We're on the internet. We demand to be heard.
Yeah, that's going to go so well.
We shall not go unheard.
Yeah.
I will not be unheard, Dan.
So, no, but I saw a lot. Well, we'll get to it in a bad show.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bad year, so.
Oh, wonderful. We'll have some, you know, it'll be intriguing. I'll have some opinions just in general.
Oh, really?
Well, you know, unless you don't want me to, Bill.
I won't share.
Quiet. I don't like sharing.
Right. Is it scream out time, Johnny?
I don't know. I'm just rambling at
all right, this scream point. Out. These are people you can find on Twitter.
Talk outs.
Yes. No, man, not on this show. All right, we're screaming out to, and this is their Twitter handle, Kelly, LA 1998. As she says, step over to the dark side. I got cookies. That's all you need to know. Ooh. She's otherwise known as HorrorFan66. A fiend on film. Yeah, laughing already. The social media page for Dave K. And he's in the horror, Indian, foreign films, art, graphic design, architecture, photos, noir. And check him out at themagnificentworldofdavek.wordpress.com. Scream Radio, and that is SCRM Radio. You can go to screamradio.com to check them out. Who's the owner? The phenomenal Tracy. That's CEE_TR. Black, hard, chick, girl power. 24/7, 365 streaming radio dedicated to all things horror and more. The lovely Louise, who is she? She's Italian Horror 01. Love everything horror in caps. The Walking Dead. Love most music, especially rock. And she also tweets in Italian.
Ooh.
There you go. Real Jilly G. She is a writer, poet, photographer, women's movement, feminist, into TWD, horror, everything else. She's fantastic. Read her great writing, poetry, and wonderful reports on the human condition at crimsonquintessence.com. Scream_Factory.
Yeah.
Yes, welcome to our official Twitter page. We focus on retro horror, sci-fi, cult classics, and release them on DVD and Blu-ray for you to devour. Yeah, they're out of LA, of course, so go to ScreamFactoryDVD.com for more. The great Ron Shaw.
Oh, yeah.
Ron Gizmo. He's retired. He's writing. He's south of north and east of west. Go to RonShawMedia.com and also go to Amazon.com to see all of his books, including poetry, horror, everything else. And he has some wonderful book covers done by the great Greg Palko of PalkoDesigns.com, which have won awards. So don't miss that. The great, the super awesome Thomas S. Flowers. Live, Laugh, Scream. And his book, Planet of the Dead, is now available on Amazon. And go to his very excellent website, thomasflowers.com. The Muse herself. Who's that? That's Halo Girl 22.
Oh, yeah.
And as she says, the problem with this world is that too many mouths are open while too many eyes remain closed. How's that?
And we just opened our mouths for about an hour and 10 minutes.
But... anyway, be quiet. She's fantastic. Follow her. MFF Horror Corner. Yeah. And that's from John. And that is, he's a horror lover, movie critic, film collector, and podcaster. Check out films. Jeez, I do it every freaking time.
Movies, films, and flicks.
At blogradio.com and go to moviesfilmsandflicks.com and that's flicks with an X.
Just remember it like the theme, Bill.
Yes.
Movies, films, and flicks.
I know, I get it.
Yeah.
Undead Walking FS. It's the home of the Walking Dead family on the Fansided Network. Where they located? Alexandria, Virginia, of course. So go to undeadwalking.com for all of your TWD needs. And the great, the Mr. Flavor himself, Philippe Trebal, social faves, CEO, top 50 brand for SMM. And that's at Alitika. And his most complete, powerful Twitter platform is WhatsApp and NC, SEEC_BS. Philippe, thank you for following and for your interest, sir. So that's it, man.
Hey, Bill. I got one to add just because I thought of it.
that's good.
Well, actually, you know, I was thinking about it, but it wasn't because I didn't write it down on my list of stuff yesterday before I printed it out.
Mm-hmm.
But a shout out to Christopher Allen Broadstone at Black Cab Prod on Twitter.
Yes.
I had the privilege of seeing his new short film, which is based off the first chapter of his recent novella, A Catch in Time, which you can watch this short, I believe, off his website, which is blackcabproductions.com. I think it's a very fascinating, intriguing exercise in style.
Awesome,
and,
man.
You know, interesting audio-visually, definitely. It's something that I still think about, and I watched it back in November, I think. And it actually was interesting enough for me to actually pick up the book that the novella is in, and I'm currently about halfway through it, and I'm actually really loving it. So
nice.
Wanted to give a shout-out to that. Definitely. And I wrote a review of A Catch in Time, Chapter 1, over at Loud Green Bird. So anyway,
awesomeness.
Paul, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Crash Palace. You could also find me as Billy Crash on Instagram.
Ah.
And on, Crash Palace, CrashPalaceProductions.com. The new site, thanks to the wonderful Brian Yunt. Also with great artwork again from Greg Palko of Palko Designs, and go there for this show. Wonderful stories, actually articles from Johnny Numb, Paul J. Williams, and more right now. Hopefully Randy Brosco will be sending me something soon. And that's pretty much it. Also find this show on iTunes and comments and commented, especially starred remarks, whether you love us or hate us on iTunes will be much appreciated.
Yes.
Johnny.
In addition to CrashPalaceProductions.com, you can find my writing on film at LoudGreenBird.com. And you can find me also on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies.
None.
And in 2018, there will continue to be no H's in those Johnnies. So,
wow, man.
I know. It's harsh.
Some things never change.
Really? Tell me about it.
Except us.
Yeah, we're still here.
Yeah, whatever that means.
We are still here, though.
All right, man. Say goodnight, Johnny.
Goodnight, Johnny.
Goodnight.